Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Establishing and maintaining public schools in Alaska is baked into the state constitution. So why is it an annual fight to fund school districts in the amounts they need to retain staff and keep up with annual repairs and improvements? Earlier this month, lawmakers voted to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's school funding veto. That was a relief to beleaguered district leaders, but those leaders say they need more to adequately support public education. Why are lawmakers and the governor at odds for how money should be allocated for public education, and what do public education advocates say is the best path forward? District leaders and the State Education Commissioner join us today for Talk of Alaska.
Alaska Public Media is now partnering with an Alaskan auction service so a helpful local team can get the biggest return for the least hassle should you decide to donate your vehicle. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/vehicle.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Laurie Townsend. Students across the state are heading back to school in the next couple of weeks. What is the best path forward for a solid education for young Alaskans? Neighborhood public schools, charter or private schools, regional boarding schools, or leaving the state? Local schools may seem like the best bet for keeping young people closer to their home regions for the future. But if their local school is falling apart or only has two teachers for four grades, are students and their communities really getting a valuable education? Why has this become such a fraught political issue? Governor Dunleavy vetoed the funding, saying he wanted to see more policy changes that would lead to better student outcomes. Here to help us understand some of the governor's thinking and ideas is the State Commissioner of the Department of Education, Dina Bishop. Also on the line with us to give perspective from school districts is Lon Garrison. Lon is the Executive Director of the Alaska Association of School Boards. And Dr. Madeline Aguillard is the Superintendent of the Cuspuck School District. Welcome, all of you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. We also hope to hear from Frank Hauser, the superintendent of the Juneau School District, during this hour. All right. So I want to get some reaction first. Ms. Aguillard, start us off. How important was the override vote for the Cuspuck School District?
Yeah. So first off, it was definitely much needed for the district. Big shout out to the legislature for working together and having that bipartisan mindset and being able to come to the table and bring something to take a step forward, start moving that needle in the direction of adequately funding public education. But for us, it was really, and what we're seeing would hopefully be the difference between a budget that can be approved by the state and one that would not be approved by the state due to deficit spending. So that really, that difference in that $200 put us over that threshold where we do now believe that we will have an approvable budget.
All right, and we'll talk more about that budget consideration as we go through the hour here. But Mr. Garrison, your thoughts, what did you hear from other districts about what the override vote will mean for them this school year?
Well, I think it was a really significant vote. It was significant in the fact that, one, districts across the state desperately needed that extra $200 in the BSA, or about just under $51 million in funding. And the other piece was that it upheld, the work of a bipartisan group of legislators that came together and said, this is the right thing to do. And it wasn't just the funding that ended up being supported. I mean, it did in the override because that was an appropriation veto. But supporting the original bill that included the increase in the BSA and then also included many policy issues along with it. So it wasn't just about money. There was other things that were in there. But in the end, it's the money that's really going to keep us going. And while it seems like a great victory, and it was, I think we have to keep in mind that in comparison to 2024 or the FY25 budget, it's only an increase of about $20 per student in the base student allocation. So it wasn't much of an increase, but at least we didn't lose ground.
All right. Thank you for starting us off. And now, Commissioner Bishop, turning to you, what was your reaction to the special session vote? Were you surprised by that override?
No, not surprised at all. Pretty much knew that that was most likely going to happen, you know, for the override. And I don't think the issue has only been about money, and that is what the governor has shared. Since the beginning of the session, when there was a bipartisan group to talk about education, a lot of money was on the line. A lot of money was, even in a three-year increasing BSA, was a part of the discussion. But it was the policy and the policy disagreements that had that fall apart. So the governor has always shared, of course, schools need additional funds, but we also must have policy that brings families together, communities together for better education, better outcomes for our young people, whether that's in the workforce or academics and things like that.
Thank you. And we'll drill down a bit there on what those policy changes he wants to see happen are. But I want to remind folks that this is Talk of Alaska. Today we're talking about the school funding veto override and what this means now for schools and districts across the state as school gets underway this week and next week. In the studio with me is Dr. Dina Bishop, the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. And on the line with us is Lon Garrison with the Alaska. He's the Executive Director of the Alaska Association of School Boards. And Dr. Madeline Aguillard is the Superintendent of the Cuspuck School District. Ms. Aguillard, you said the veto override means you'll have a budget that is still in deficit. Describe that process and how big the gap is for you now.
So the process has definitely been a painstaking one. When we started our budget planning for this current school year, it was then the upcoming school year, we definitely came to the table without any additions, without adding on any programs and staff, well over a number that we could even consider balancing. So when we started, we were looking at like a $3.2 million deficit. A lot of that can be attributed to, you know, rising costs of rising fixed costs. So utility costs, fuel costs, those items that we have no control over. But the pieces that we do have control over, that's what's impacting our students the most. And so when our board started the process to balance a budget, you know, keep in mind we are an REAA, and so we do not have a tax base. We rely on the federal government and the state to fund education for our district. So we, you know, approached it from the mindset because we've been cutting across the board, administrators and teachers, classified staff, cooks, business office, but all of those cuts, you know, we approached it with where could we do the least harm to students? Unfortunately, the cuts that we've already made really have impacted our students' opportunities, our students' achievement, and are negatively impacting those. And so the board took the approach, you know, what they are going to preserve were people and those opportunities for students. But, you know, once we, you know, whittled away and, you know, cut phone lines and different things like that, cut the curriculum budget, the supply budget across the district, you know, we were able to get it around $1.5 million. Therein, you know, we, you know, put it in perspective, our numbers are not large like the big districts, but that is almost our entire, you know, certified staff budget. You know, we would remain with a couple, maybe four teachers district-wide for nine schools. Or, you know, if we looked at it from a classified perspective, again, almost our entire classified staff. So there would be no classified staff in schools because the remaining positions would go towards business office and maintenance. And so those are just, you know, impossible ways to balance a budget. You can't function with zero staff across 9 schools and 7 different villages at all. So that was really the process that the board used. And again, you know, we submitted, there is the 10% rule on what can, you know, now stay in reserves. That budget really is leveraging our total reserves. And so while it gets us through this year, we have yet to figure out if things remain status quo, what do we do next year if we've used up our entire reserves? So that's where we're at right now.
All right, and I definitely want us to talk more about this idea that 4 teachers could serve 9 schools as we go through the hour here. But Mr. Garrison, turning to you, in an earlier interview, you said you were thrilled when the veto override was successful. You called it hopeful. But we have heard clearly that districts say, yes, this is good, but we need a lot more just to catch up. Do you see this success as maybe breaking through with the message that public schools need more help and maybe next session there will be an easier path to additional funds, or how do you see it?
Well, I do see it as hopeful. I don't know that it's going to get any easier, and one reason that's going to be the case is that we don't have a clear path forward for the state in terms of revenue. How are we going to fund these things? And I don't want to give anybody the impression that we're advocating for something without the knowledge that we have a real challenge ahead of us to find out how or determine how we're going to fund the state government and in particular education. And education is one of those priorities, and it's the one priority that's mandated in the Constitution. But kind of back to your question, I do think it's hopeful. I do think there's going to continue to be a vigorous debate about how much is going to be available to continue to support public education because, this $700 increase was really less than half of what we need to make up for lost ground due to inflation over, close to a decade or more. So we have a long ways to go, and I think Superintendent Aguilar's examples of what they're losing in the Cuspuck district are one example, but if you look to other districts, you're going to see many of the same things happening, maybe not quite as dramatic as that because some of the larger districts, have the capability to react in a little broader sense. But nonetheless, what we're seeing across the board is districts are dropping programs, they're dropping the ability to maintain facilities like pools and those kinds of things. So opportunities for students are in decline. We need to focus and make sure that we're supporting academic performance and academic outcomes. But we know within our system that it's kind of the whole package. So the opportunity for students to come to school, to feel safe, to learn, and then to participate in activities and all those other things that help build, a citizen that's going to be, somebody that's going to be highly valued and effective in our society. So,
and when you look
at a job.
Sorry about that. Excuse me. When you look across the state's district, we've heard a lot of numbers bandied about. You just said 700 mm-hmm. is less than half of what's needed. We've heard numbers ranging from 1,500 to 1,800. When you look across the state's districts, what is the number you'd like to see for a BSA increase? What does it need to be, in your estimation, to be caught up with inflation and things through the years?
I think one of the numbers that's out there that's probably the most prevalent number, which looks back to probably about 2017, is the 1808 number. So that takes us back and accounts for inflation back to about 2017. If you go back even further, the last major increase in the base student allocation that came through was in about 2011. And then ever since then, it's been pretty minimal with the addition of what we call outside the foundation formula funding. It's distributed through the foundation, but it's outside funding. It's one-time funding. So that has kind of come and gone. It doesn't happen every year. It happens numerous times. And so, you know, we want to thank the legislature and the governor, whoever the governor was at the time, for making sure that that does happen. And that happened last year. But the problem is that it's not consistent, and it has not really kept up with growing costs. So you have costs not only of, you know, operating a school district just from goods and services and those kinds of things, utilities, but then making sure that when school districts go into negotiations and negotiate new contracts with teachers, that you know, they too are experiencing the cost of inflation, and so there has to be an opportunity to make sure that we keep up with that.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Bishop, turning to you now. Governor Dunleavy said there weren't enough reforms included in the education funding bill. What were the main reforms the governor wanted to see but wasn't able to get yet?
Sure. So some of those reforms, he wants to continue to add value to the READS Act and the reading by funding outside tutoring. In the prior bill, the language was passed, but it was not funded to really support students that are on track and or show growth. So it wasn't that you reached a certain mark of proficiency, but that you were on your way there as well. So really increasing support to schools when there's a return on the investment. And that was key because we continue to invest in schools. This is, I came here in 1990 after graduating college, and this scenario isn't new to me. Every year we've had the ring the bell of the BSA. We've, you know, received outside the funding formula money. But again, even when I was a superintendent running schools, it was about, we're going to give you money, but what are we going to do with it? So the money is always at that reach, but what are schools going to do? And some of the reforms that we talk about are engaging, whether you like individually or not, they're basically all at the core value of a parent and a community. And really based on classrooms. So whether that be teachers and parents that, invest in charter schools, those are public schools. They're public schools that have a different idea. Takes high investment of parents and teachers. Whether that is some other reforms in his prior bill was really supporting more correspondence. And the reason for that is that more parents are choosing these little learning pods and homeschools. They're run from our public school districts, but they don't get the funding for those at all. So every child that may stay in your district, if they move out of a brick and mortar school, if you will, into that type of program, districts are losing money. But in the last 10 years, it's more than doubled people choosing that way. We, I think, encouraged that through the pandemic when we shut our doors. Mm-hmm. Parents enjoyed it, liked it, or saw what was in a school and wanted to do that themselves. There are lots of changes in that area, and it's we see it growing, especially with the individualized education that some of those things can produce. So those types of reforms are engagement of families and kids, and it's just enough to, it's not a savior for everybody. There's, not necessarily, we've had charter laws for 30 years and there's only 31 charter schools. So it's not like charter schools are going to take over, but it does upset a little bit the norm, which is what we need to do is to take a look and say, where are we going? The last reform was really open enrollment, which meant if you're in Alaska and there's a school and you can actually get to it, obviously, the superintendent of Cuspuck, it might not, work out there when you have to air travel. But if there's a school, whether it's in your local district or another district that's adjacent, and that is the best school for your child, that if there's space, that was what the law had always said, that the receiving district shares the space availability, and then someone from another district can come in, and then you would be paid for that student, not only during the time in October, but also in the spring count to ensure that if you had your doors open to kids and families that wanted to go to your schools, that you would be paid for that. And it really engenders having schools and bringing people back to districts and creating the schools that people are going to choose to attend. But again, the financing was never disputed. It's really how do we return on the investment? And I've been a superintendent a long time. I've been in this job a less amount of time, but it does more money, I can guarantee you, doesn't make change in a young person's life, particularly to make sure and ensure learning happens so that they have a bright future. It's the right kind of funding and it's the right kind of policy that really assists school districts with kids.
And I want to let Ms. Aguillard and Mr. Garrison respond to that. But first, I wanted to ask, following up about the policy reforms, the governor would like to see the state education board approve charter schools in districts rather than local school districts. What's the thinking behind taking that authority away from local school districts?
Sure. It's actually not taking the local authority away. It's adding another avenue. So it doesn't remove, and most charters and the first thing you want to do is work with your school district. We have in the last couple years experienced where the way that the law is set up is that if the school board does not want to hear a charter renewal or a charter school application, it's thick with bureaucracy. I was participated in that as well, self-reporting, that you could really make it a nightmare for those parents and teachers who are coming with that idea because of it is complicated to run schools. It isn't easy. And having a charter school in your district is a little extra work for you. But it is a choice that people love. And the first thing to success is I'm going somewhere where I love is the first thing. And so I guess for lack of a better term, we kind of slow rolled these until they would go away. We've had two existing issues in the last few years. And generally what happens if you have an ability to go somewhere else to do the same thing, then I'm going to behave maybe a little bit better and work with you. And so I want to keep you in my district. I want to keep my parents and my teachers and kids in my own district. And so it was actually a result of some instances where some slow rolling happened. And in fact, in one instance, we finally were able to get the charter school heard. The local board turned it down because it wasn't a complete charter, and the state school board supported that. So it isn't that the state school board's taking over. It was that let's follow the law, and the law shares that within 60 days of receiving, you will review that charter and either give it a thumbs up or thumbs down, and then let the process happen. But what happens now is that the process can't even proceed because we're slow rolling those charters.
Ms. Aguillard, your thoughts about the policy reforms generally that the governor was wanting to have in place, and specifically as it relates to charter schools in your district?
So Commissioner Bishop is absolutely right as far as the movement between open enrollment piece and then additionally the charter school piece. I mean, those really are two things that in no way, shape, or form impact Cusbuck School District, and which unfortunately we are paying the price of some of these arguments and the back and forth and the holdouts. But, you know, we consistently hear public comment, our board gets stopped in the store, I get stopped in the store, our teachers, you know, our communities, our families, our students, they want brick and mortar schools with live in-person teachers in front of their children. That is the hope, that is the dream. And for that to be provided in each of our villages that, you know, by the Constitution should be afforded an adequate education. That's what they're coming to the table asking for. Our outward migration is not to correspondence. It's not to homeschool. We don't offer a correspondence program. We don't offer a homeschool program. Because it's not something that our families are even coming to us asking for. Where they're going is to boarding school, perpetuating that cycle, you know, of leaving the village, where they're, you know, feeling that the opportunity, the only opportunity at this point, would be to move. And so that's the piece that unfortunately is detrimental to the district in those conversations as far as holding you know, adequate funding up based on problems or issues or policies that might impact relatively a small number of districts in the state. If you look across the state in the 53 districts, I would say there's probably more that are similar to not having charter schools or not having private schools within their district than there are districts that are dealing with the charter schools and the correspondence pieces. And so, I mean, that's really my first thought. There are other pieces in there that absolutely, you know, improving reading and reading proficiency. I mean, we've been on board since day one with the Reads Act. I mean, every professional development that we, you know, can possibly afford through grant funding, we leverage all of our grant funding for those opportunities because, you know, the funding wasn't adequately attached to it. We're trying, we see the value, we want our students to read proficiently. We've seen growth, even with, I would say, trying to kind of shoestring things together to make it happen. You know, K-5, we've seen a 25% proficiency increase. Our K-3 students, they doubled the number of students that are reading proficiently. And so I do agree, you know, good policy, it does matter. But when we are implementing that policy at the jeopardy of, say, math, science, social studies, career, tech, ed, you know, that those are the things that are losing out because of, you know, other unfunded policies. But we do believe in them, you know, and so it's a give and take. And mm-hmm. and that's the choices that many districts are having to make. And it's really impossible choices again. And so really just, you know, my hope and thought is eventually rural and remote districts, voices will be heard and those considerations will be brought to the table and we'll be able to enter those conversations. But right now, you know, a lot of the conversations really are being had that don't even exist in our world, in our region, and what we're, you know, the population, the students that we're serving.
All right. And I do want to get reaction from Mr. Garrison, but we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll hear from Mr. Garrison about what other districts may be considering with these policy changes that the governor would like to see as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Consider a gift of stock to Alaska Public Media. You may avoid paying capital gains tax and receive a deduction. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/stock or contact your financial advisor.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing funding for Alaska schools as the fall school season gets underway in the next couple of weeks. We have the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development, Dina Bishop, in the studio with us today. On the line is Lon Garrison, the Executive Director of the Alaska Association of School Boards, and Dr. Madeline Aguilard is the Superintendent of the Kuspuk School District. Mr. Garrison, your thoughts about the policy reforms that the governor would like to see, and then we'll go to the phones for a moment.
Yeah, sure, you bet. First off, before I talk about the policy issues, I just want to say that, you know, what I am going to be speaking about are the views and the stance of the members of our association. So as their executive director, that's what I'm speaking to, is what they have said as a group that they stand behind and how they feel about the different policies. So if we take, for instance, open enrollment, here's the unique thing is we have open enrollment in the state of Alaska. It's called voluntary open enrollment. And so students have the opportunity to decide to go to a different school, whether it's inside the district, if that's applicable, or outside the district. And there's nothing within regulation or policy that prevents that. It's the district that's going to be receiving the student then that we'll have to take a look, you know, is there room and where are they going to go and those kinds of things. And in my conversations with particularly the Anchorage School District and their relationship with the Matsu Borough School District, that, you know, students go back and forth all the time. And so there is open enrollment happening and they accommodate that. And it's not that many students that are doing that. So for a policy to come out and basically say it's mandatory open enrollment. In other words, this is available to anyone and you have to do it, and districts would have to accommodate that based on some criteria. So I think, you know, the piece is that in terms of policy, it doesn't have a huge effect on much of the state, and that most of what we see is going to happen probably within the rail belt. And the other piece of open enrollment is we've had open enrollment for a long time, and it works very well for our correspondence school students. So that's an example of open enrollment that currently works well. School districts work that out between themselves, and we have students enrolling in correspondence programs all over the state with various school districts. So I don't see that as a real critical policy issue. The next piece is the charter school issue. And, charter schools have been around for 30-plus years, they have done exceptionally well in the state of Alaska. We actually have 30 or 31 school districts across the state. That number plateaued, and it didn't plateau because school districts decided they didn't want any more charter schools. It was just the demand for charter schools tended to be achieved. Now, there are new charter schools that continually come up, and the commissioner mentioned a couple of those that came up. And, you know, I am concerned when I hear, boards are slow rolling this because they don't want that. That certainly shouldn't happen. There is school district policy and there's regulation. And so there is a process that must be carried out. But I think we have to be careful to understand how that process works and whether or not those charter school applications are complete. And I think we have to understand that to create a school, and a charter school is a full-blown school, that it's a very complex issue. There's a lot of parts and pieces that go into that. And so completing that application is no small feat, and that takes some time. Mm. And it may take a couple of opportunities working with the board and going through the process to get it right. And then sometimes it never quite gets right. And I think the commissioner's example of how it worked with one recently where, you know, the school board denied it. It got appealed. It went to the State Board of Education. And they also determined that it wasn't a complete application. It didn't meet the needs and requirements of opening a school. So I think that's a great example of how the process works. Are there things that we can improve in the process? Yes, absolutely. Some of that is with school boards, getting them to understand what their role and responsibility is and what those timelines are, make sure that works out well. But on the state side as well, making sure that the review and determination of those charter school applications is dealt with in a timely manner as well. And it's not something that the State Board of Education has decided to do or the commissioner. It's, you know, without reason, it's in regulation and statute about how long that takes. And so those are some reforms that we've suggested that could make that application process go a little bit faster. So,
all right.
ASB has been a big supporter of charter schools as a public school option, and we do a lot of work with charter schools.
All right. So, Commissioner, I want to let you respond to what you heard there. But it sounds like, from what Mr. Garrison just said, that there is a process in place now for charter people that want to start a charter school, go to their local school board. The school board says no. They can appeal it now to the state education board for consideration. So what change needs to be put on top of that, sure, would you say?
Sure. So thank you. There's within state statute, it does. So all of these aren't necessarily district. There's statutory requirements that districts have to do. And there's just some ways to sidestep them. And I am speaking from someone who ran a couple districts. And so I absolutely have the inside information about how this is done. And it's really, you put a bureaucratic mindset on it and you can bury somebody. And so in the one case where it was appealed to the state board and the state board upheld it, I was involved in that. And it was a district that continued to just, you didn't do this right. It was 3 years in the making. that this community group wanted their charter heard. And, well, you had to let us know by in a letter by August 1st, and they didn't. Okay, so then they waited the next year. Well, no, you needed to. So it's all these, we're really not helping out, and we're like holding up the information, and instead of really being open and transparent about, don't forget to do this, this, and this. So basically slowed it down for 3 years. Finally, I worked with the superintendent, like, you're going to be caught on a technical issue with your own timeline if you don't hear this charter. So finally, they heard the charter, and it wasn't good. So they didn't have anything to fear to begin with, because good charters and good schools for kids will be good. And so don't try to impede the process because you don't want to have that happen. And so the appeal process, however, only occurs when the school board actually hears the charter. So for those three years, there were no other place to go.
There's no other avenue.
Right.
Okay.
The same thing is happening in a separate school district this year, that it's just a way to, if you don't want something to happen, you're going to find a way not to make it happen. And it's been problematic. As far as open enrollment, of course, there's kids can go to a different district, but they're charged. They're charged a fee, and I have experience of that. So those that are come out clean, they're charged a fee to attend the new district. Those parents that know enough and have that kind of capital that they just get a separate address to prove, you know, so they're making this happen, but they're just not doing it above board, or they're paying upwards of $3,500. And that was the case in Anchorage when I found that some of our teachers, all they wanted was their kids to come into Anchorage with them and to go to their school, which is a wonderful thing. And we were competing for teachers from the MATSU that I had also worked in. And so I was like, we're charging our own teachers to bring their kids in. And these teachers have their homes out in MATSU, and they could just as easy get a job out there. Let's not charge them. The moment that I did that, 20 more came above board and said, well, actually, I'm bringing my kid too. So there is, it isn't this thing, oh, we already have it, they can do it. It's that it's done all underground. Let's be transparent and open so that not people who have the money and the means can do this, but that all parents know that this would be an option if it works for you. It's not going to work for anybody. In fact, nationally, it's 1-2% of the population that choose that.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Martin is in Fairbanks. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I've been following education in the country and in Alaska, you know, since I got here in 1970. And I've worked in the schools, and, you know, a good part of my career was in the schools. And I would like to say that I see the way we're headed. This is all political. We are headed toward privatizing public education. It won't be public education anymore. It will be private education. There will be a voucher system. It's happened in Arizona. It's starting to happen elsewhere. And all the changes that the governor is promoting are pretty right-wing, you know, Project 25 kind of things. And that's the whole thing. You know, I've got an ancient graduate degree in education from UAF. And, I remember James Conant, one of the early presidents of Harvard, and his ideal was that public schools are a way to even the playing field so that, you know, the rich and poor send their kids to the same school and it's merit-based and you excel or you don't. And, you know, the rich will always have the advantage, but at least the public schools make the playing field a little bit more level. And the whole thing about the voucher system is just to subsidize, you know, those that have and leave out those that have not. And the charter school system is a soft way of getting into that. But I think the whole thing ultimately is to have a voucher system, eliminate the Department of Education and make it all private. I'd like to know what the commissioner says about that, and also your other guest.
All right. Thank you, Martin. I think he has expressed the fears of a lot of people that they're afraid, oh, no, public schools, we're going to siphon money away from public schools and privatize education. What is your response to these concerns that Martin has raised?
Sure. So I can appreciate it. Thank you for voicing them. Number one, you started the conversation today, quoting and speaking to the state's constitution. The state's constitution does not allow for privatization of public education. So that's number one. Number two is this is really an ability to get out in front of what is happening across the nation. Our charter schools are number one in the nation, and they're number one in the nation because of the most underserved kids. Harvard, and the school that he also quoted, actually did a study and took the National Assessment of Education Progress. So that's a third party coming into Alaska and assessing us, not ourselves,
right,
and showed that our charter schools really function really well. We're number one, but when you take out the kids who are most underserved in Alaska, or Alaska Native or other students, non-white, our ranking drops. When you take out our low SES, our ranking drops. So there is something to say that students whose needs are not traditionally met or regularly met through the public education system, through a charter that actually is created around innovation, around their needs from the teachers and the parents, actually is in a public system meeting their needs. When we focus on the child, if you're upset about the government and privatization, like, let's bring it down to the kids and where are the kids succeeding and create just, I don't care what you call them, but create really good schools for those kids. Another part of the governor's education policy was tribal education, to really support tribal education, holding them accountable by the same standards that everybody else is in statutes in Alaska, but seeing if they can meet the needs better than we are, you know, if you will. So it isn't just about charters and this. It's about where is the corpus of that value between the teacher and the child and the parent, and that's what we want to focus on.
Tailoring educational settings for cultural norms that may be different in different places. Ms. Aguilar and Mr. Garrison, your thoughts here about this idea of charters and privatization?
I'll let Madeline go first.
So sorry.
Okay, thanks, Lon. I, you know, just a real brief comment, and I'll just express from my own fear and from what Martin is saying, I definitely see the connection, and I definitely see that as the path as well. And, you know, kind of my rebuttal would be if the Constitution, you know, does not allow for privatized education, my fear is, are we going to follow the Constitution for some things and not others? You know, the Constitution also says, shall establish and maintain a system of public schools. And I would argue that we are not maintaining a system of public schools at this point in time. And so my fear is that pick and choose that we've seen also at the national level of what pieces of the Constitution are we going to follow and abide by?
Mr. Garrison.
Well, it's a good question. I think our members do have concerns over, you know, what is happening. We watch what's happening across the nation, and we wonder when it's going to wash up on the shores of Alaska, so to speak. And I think some of us and some of the school board members are saying, hey, we got to watch this pretty closely. It kind of seems like we're going in that direction. I think the thing about charter schools, for instance, and one thing that does make them exceptionally successful is for most charter schools, you have to have very involved parents. You can't really be a part of the charter school and not be an involved parent. And so that means automatically that those students are generally getting more support than maybe a lot of the other students that might be in the traditional brick and mortar school. So right there could be a demographic differentiation in terms of how well those students are doing. But the charter school model itself is designed specifically to respond to people that want and need a different way to educate their students. And school boards across the state are supportive of that, and we have several resolutions that support that as a public school option. So I don't see us backing away. I don't see the association backing away from that in any way, shape, or form.
All right. Yeah. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we will continue our discussion about the future of education in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues. Doug in Anchorage had a question about the status of the condemned school in Sleetmute. What is happening with that? Do you have any insight for us?
I would have to get an update from the funding has been provided in different areas, and we continue to work with them. This year, we have 10 additional projects have been approved for funding in rural Alaska. And, you know, Superintendent Aguillard mentioned just the needs in the capital investments is pretty great. And that's something that I don't think education can solve. We built lots of schools in small communities, some with, you know, 10 to 15 students, because we said it's more valuable here. But the replacement of those buildings is upwards of $40 million. And so thinking about all those different and the economy of scale and the cost, I don't know that there'll ever be enough money to actually reinvest as we did during the heydays of the oil. So we are going to have to think about this differently. We do need safe places for kids to learn, but thinking about how do we come together as a community and make those choices about which schools that we're going to have. There is a process right now for capital investment, and it certainly isn't enough because the need is so great. But without rethinking this, the money that is funneled out of public education to just like instructionally to think about capital as well, there's probably 100 times the need of that in the capital investment. And we have to rethink this and like, how is it best going to work out for Alaska given so many needs, capital needs across our state?
And Mr. Garrison, pick it up there for just a minute. What are you hearing from the district where the Sleetmute school is and other districts that have similar maintenance repair concerns?
Well, I hear that there is it's not just a tremendous need. It goes beyond that. I think when we look at it and when our board of directors gets together and we talk about some of these issues, what do we need in Alaska to make sure that facilities are safe places for kids to go and they're places where kids can learn? And when you get into situations like what Dr. Aguillard has in Cuspuck and Sleetmute, those are not places for a good education to occur. And I think if you look hard at it, at some point you have to say, well, this is more than just an education issue. This really, in my mind, is a human rights issue that we have neglected over a long period of time of maintaining those buildings. And we don't have a system that works well to make that happen. And I think Dr. Bishop just brought that up, is that, you know, we try to fund maintenance out of our ordinary operating budget. And when you get to the point where you don't have many resources to allocate, oftentimes maintenance is going to be one of the first ones to go or be reduced, because the idea is, well, we have to keep a teacher in a classroom. And because that's where education happens. But the education happens with a teacher in a classroom, and that classroom and that building needs to be such that they can successfully teach. So I do think we have to rethink this. I don't feel daunted by the fact that we don't have the money today. We have to find it. We have to figure out how that's going to work, because we owe that to every student across the state of Alaska, no matter where they're at. And, you know, there's law that backs that up.
And Ms. Aguillard, we're just have a few minutes left here, but 10 years of essentially flat funding is like a cut. Costs keep rising. Money hasn't kept up. This means you've reduced staff numbers, teachers, instructional aides, admin, and office staffing. How many positions have you had to give up in the past decade, and what do you see now looking out going forward?
Real quick, first I just want to say, Doug, as you know, superintendent for Cusbuck, SleepMute is in the district. We have started that project. However, the budget does not allow for the full scope of the project. So unfortunately, we are not able to put a metal roof back on that building, but work has started, and we are going to use every dollar that we have at our disposal to ensure that that building is safe and those students have access to, you know, a safe environment to live in after 19 years of applications. You know, I don't have, and Lori, back to your question, I do not have the total number of positions that we have had to reduce in combination with certified and classified in front of me, unfortunately.
But you were saying earlier that even if you reduce down to four teachers over nine schools, you would still be in deficit. How many students are you talking about across those nine schools for four teachers?
So our district roughly hovers right around 300 students, give or take on a year. That is, you know, it is down from that outward migration, mostly due to a lack of, you know, community services that the district honestly is perpetuating by not being able to offer appropriate programs to our secondary students, unfortunately. But, you know, the issue in rural Alaska, and Lon alluded to this earlier, where larger districts can restructure, you know, they might be able to close one school and bus students to another. In rural Alaska, when you close a school, you essentially, you're killing that village. That is the life, the heart of a community. It is, you know, beyond just a school and a learning environment. And once there is no opportunity for school, there are a lot of families, I mean, that cannot provide homeschool. They cannot run correspondence programs. You know, 94% of our families are Alaska Native, and all year long, they are doing subsistence activities. They are out. They have, lives to sustain. And so some of those options just don't work. And so, unfortunately, you know, closing a school is really not an option until there is absolutely no other choice in our budgetary situation. Mm-hmm. And that's what our board is trying to hang on to and preserve for our communities.
And we only have about a minute left. Commissioner Bishop, as a former teacher, you were a teacher in the 90s. You've been a school superintendent both in the Mat-Su and in Anchorage. Now you're the Commissioner of Education. School is getting underway now in the next week or so. What do you want to see moving forward now to help support the districts? You're hearing the constraints that districts are under. They're calling for more funding. What is your response and what do you hope to see going forward?
Sure. That's a great question. And it's success. It's success of schools in small places like Cusbuck, where, you know, very few kids go into each building, as well as folks online have referenced, like larger areas that just have the economy of scale. We want success in both places, but success in differences have to look different. What we do statewide isn't working because we put one, this is how we do business. I would love to see some type of funding, as the superintendent said, that really looks at energy and those fixed costs, because it is something very different when you're putting, you know, 10% of your budget into that, where somewhere in maybe Cusbuck is 30 to 40%, it does take out of classrooms. But the key feature is not let's protect our schools. The key feature is how do we bring success to our students? And if we start with students and then build out and start having those conversations that way, matching finances with policy to help people and move Alaska along to be a place where people want to live and stay, that's where I see the success can happen.
All right. Well, thank you so much to Dr. Dina Bishop, the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Thank you to Lon Garrison, the Executive Director of the Alaska Association of School Boards. And thanks to Dr. Madeline Aguillard, who is the superintendent of the Cuspuck School District. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, on the board, our producer, Madeline Rose, our editor is Annie Feit, and on the phone, Sam Lang and Ammon Swenson helped us out today. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.